Welcome into Scoops with DannyMac.com and Ben Fred Fridays. It's our visit with Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch and KTRS Radio. It's presented by Hair Salon for Men, Hot Shot Sports Bar and Grill, Ryan Kelly, and Schnucks. We're coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios. Lots to get into. It's always a look ahead and the week that was in sports. We'll talk Mizzou, SLU, Cardinals, the St. Louis Blues, and we'll get into my interview, if you missed it, with Jim Cavanaugh on the website. A lot of news in that interview, and we'll talk probably 5 or 10 minutes on the MLS situation to St. Louis. This is presented by Hair Salon for Men, home base right here in St. Louis. Founded in 1997, they now have 16 locations in St. Louis. That means there's one near you. I was there last weekend with my son. A couple of weeks before that, I was in there. You'll receive the perfect haircut. Hair Salon keeps client notes on each customer, and it's only $22. With that, you get a haircut, complimentary beverage, shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all for just $22, and that's at Hair Salon for Men. The Blues are in action tonight, and you can see the action at Hot Shot Sports Bar and Grill's 11 area locations. Score a hat trick of savings. Great food and drink specials available during every Blues game. That includes Bud Family Beer Specials, $4 Jack Daniel Cocktails, $5.99 Blue Sapler Appetizers, $4 Blue Note Bombs, and the all-new Golden Bread Cocktail, all for $5 at Hot Shot Sports Bar and Grill. We get into everything. Mizzou, SLU, what's happening with MLS, Joe Quenneville with the Blues, and a lot of MLS talk coming up with, you know him, you love him, Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch coming up.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. There's never been a better time to look at a refinance. Maybe it's time to get rid of the PMI or get some cash out to pay off the credit cards. 5 minutes could save you $500 a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios on Scoops with DannyMac.com. It's Ben Fred Fridays, and this is quickly becoming one of my favorite visits of the week. And it's really not because I get to visit with Ben Fred. It's just because it's Friday. Good morning, Ben.
I thought it was because of me. You could have left that last part out, I think.
I'm sorry, Ben. You know, your profile in this town is you know, growing rapidly because of Scoops DannyMac.com, not because of the Post-Dispatch or KTRS Radio. It's because of the website, and I get the chance to visit with you. I'm a lowly member of the media, and I'm excited. It's Friday, but not really to visit with you.
Well, that's I'm excited because there's always usually good sports events going on the weekend. So we can agree to disagree on some of that, but agree that it's good to be on Friday.
Now, we love talking sports, and our relationship goes back to when you were working at Fox Sports Midwest, and obviously you garnered my attention with your great writing and attention to detail. And we were talking about an interview that I did, and I want to start with this. And we cover, for fans that are just downloading this or clicking on this for the first time, our conversation this week starts with, and by the way, if you're just coming to the site for the first time and visiting and hearing Ben Fredrickson, we try to cover the week that was and also the weekend that will be. And we want to start with this. I had the visit with Jim Cavanaugh on the website, and it was the first time that I think fans have heard from Jim probably in 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks about the chance of MLS coming to St. Louis. And he said a lot of different things in there and updated fans, at least in my opinion, on stadium situation, ownership, taxes, how they're going to work with tickets and whatnot. I thought it was an all-encompassing interview. Now, I'm biased, obviously, but what were your takeaways with the interview with Jim Cavanaugh? What did you take away as far as MLS coming to St. Louis?
Well, I think it's good to hear that there's still, you know, a lot of optimism about it. It's good to hear that, you know, things are on good terms between the alderman and the state when it comes to the final hurdles. And then the timeline. I mean, he told you that, they're hoping to get this lined up within the next 90 days. And that was interesting to me because really since the announcement of the new group, we haven't heard much about how it's going, and that's not a bad thing, but it's just been kind of a thing I think people are wondering about, or what's the latest on it. And to me, the big question, and I'm going to kind of get into this for tomorrow's paper, is looking around at the competition, because I think it's very clear to St. Louis and to the folks involved here that MLS would like to have a team here, and I don't think that's changed. it's also clear that there's a reason MLS has not come out and publicly said, look, St. Louis is getting a team. It's because some boxes are left unchecked here that they're trying to get squared away, and also because other cities are pushing for that final spot. And the final spot, if you assume that Columbus is going to kind of split its team up to keep one team there and move one to Austin. So there's a lot of movement going on that's worth kind of, I think, taking a lay of the land and also looking at the other teams that are the other cities that are trying to get teams and which cities have had setbacks. San Diego, for example, just got a disappointing result in a vote that they had on election night. So that looks like they're kind of back to square one. So it's not just St. Louis here. It's a series of cities that are pushing for that spot. But, you know, again, as Mr. Kavanaugh said to you, I think St. Louis is in a good place, but I think they've got to get going here if they're going to want to have an official word from the league that they're going to be able to seal the deal.
Okay, so you mentioned there's some boxes that need to get checked off. From your perspective, what would you say those boxes are? What do you want to see checked off?
Well, I think, the big thing is the biggest hurdle is getting things squared away on the land and making sure that that's, you know, good to go for the stadium development. And the other thing would be, you know, as long as it's not signed off on by the alderman, then there's always a risk of, I think, a hang up. I mean, we've seen enough things get hung up by the alderman that it's never safe to assume. That said, I think this plan is going to be a lot more well received than the previous plan. And it sounds like the most encouraging news from your interview with Mr. Kavanaugh was that everybody seems to be on the same page here. They've got, you know, the governor, Governor Parsons, seems to get it, unlike the previous governor. I think that's the best way to put that. And also the aldermen seem to be on board here. So it doesn't sound like there should be major, you know, major pauses or delays, but until it's all signed, sealed, and delivered, then I think MLS fans, and the St. Louis especially, are going to be hesitant about whether or not it's going to happen. And remember, too, that there are also other cities, other areas working on their plans as well. So to me, those are the biggest, you know, the biggest things to watch is can they get the land and can they get the alderman to sign off on it? And I think because of the way the tax is situated, where it's only really taxing the folks who come to the games, then that's going to be more well-received. The other thing that's worth, I guess, pointing out, at least to some degree, is there's going to be some discussion, I think, probably about the entertainment tax, which that's something that has been overlooked for pretty much every sports team in the city. I mean, the Blues and the Cardinals, they've had accommodations on that, and it should just be the way things were done. If you had a big sports venue, you kind of were able to finagle the entertainment tax. That's not so much the case anymore as cities are paying more and more attention to what sports teams get. And I'm kind of the mindset that if the people who are going to the games are paying the taxes on the games for the most part, then I'm not going to, you know, raise a big stink about the team getting a break in the entertainment tax. But I do think it's worth examining. And I think some folks are going to say, look, you know, this is not a good way for doing things for a city that needs all the money it can get. So I wouldn't be surprised to see if that is debated at some point.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. The fact that Jim did say the mayor's office to the board of aldermen to the state offices to the governor all are in quote unquote unity for the most part right now. Now, when we get to crunch time, we'll see if that happens. He did mention the 90-day window basically to get this done. So there's a lot that needs to happen. And he mentioned how and this to me points to that the youth of the sport and the growth of the sport is important. Through social media, how you, the fan, can get involved by just hashtagging on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and the various platforms that are out there can make an impact with Don Garber. And they've been saying that from day one. But I followed up on, and you just touched upon it, the tax situation. That look, and I'm not sure that this point was hammered enough the first go around. That look, if you buy a ticket, that ticket is paying for the situation on the taxes of the stadium. And I think that in the next 90 days, you know, Mr. Kavanaugh and his ownership group need to get out front and center as much as they can media wise, and whether it be public forums, whether it be going on your show, my podcast, the various sports shows and news stations, whatever the case may be, but get out in front as much as they can and explain this in 90 days and go for broke and let it rip, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, really proving to the folks who would be interested in going to the games, and also, you know, the folks who would just be interested in having another team in the city, and also proving to the other competing cities that St. Louis has a better plan and is closer to fruition. I mean, I think it's really important to point out this isn't just happening in a vacuum. I mean, there's a group in Phoenix that's pushing for a team. You know, San Diego took a step back, but St. Louis has taken a step back before, and here they are now. You know, so every other place that is pushing for this is also in the mix. Now, I do think MLS has said, look, we want to be in St. Louis. They've been pretty candid about that. But they've also told San Diego they want to be there. And it makes sense for MLS to keep its options open. But, you know, I can't believe the Taylor family gets involved with a project like this unless it has a pretty good idea that it's going to get a team if it completes its mission. I think that, you know, that would be a bad deal for them to sign off on this if they weren't pretty sure that the MLS was going to follow through if they got it done. But we are talking about a kind of a decreasing amount of time here and a lot of other competition. So I think St. Louis is more favorable. And I think it would behoove the folks in charge of it to make that point and make it loud and clear.
I agree. Hey, St. Louis, Dan McLaughlin here. Big things are happening at Schnucks, especially in October. This month, you'll start to see Schnucks stores popping up all over the city. Living in St. Louis, you know Schnucks is committed to the communities they serve. Now, there will be 19 new Schnucks stores in neighborhoods all around town. You'll also notice that prices are falling, and your points will be piling up with the Schnucks Rewards app. So check out a new store near you. Come say hello. Visit Schnucks.com for the full list of new stores. See you at Schnucks. I want to switch gears now. Baseball town in many ways, and baseball front and center. GM meetings have come to a close. Everybody's talking about Bryce Harper. Just give me your initial impressions of what you've seen reported, what you've heard from Mo, and what you think about the prospects of Bryce Harper to St. Louis.
Well, I was thinking as we were talking about MLS and how the organization pays attention to what fans tweet about and what they want, and I was thinking, man, Cardinals fans are wishing that if what they tweeted about was in some way influencing their team, they would have had Harper yesterday. But no, I mean, to me, it's not all that surprising what comes out of those GM meetings. We know that the Cardinals, you know, can see a fit with Bryce Harper, but that's been clear. I mean, the Cardinals have eyes just like we all do. We see the potential fit there. We also know the potential concern. He's going to want a boatload of money and a bunch of years. I mean, when you turn down a contract, whether it was an official offer or just more floated, when you don't want 10 years and $300 million from the team that you played for your whole life, you're thinking big years and big money. So, you know, if you had to bet today about the Cardinals giving that kind of an offer, probably history tells us to bet against it. So I think it's, you know, it makes sense for people to say, well, I don't think that's going to happen. Yet the Cardinals are interested. They've shown interest. Now, will it get down to the Cardinals and the Phillies and the Cardinals in a bidding war? It's hard to imagine that happening based off of what we know about this team. There are also some other things to point to. The Cardinals have as much money now as they've ever had in terms of contracts coming off the books, and also the TV money through Fox Sports Midwest, which I think a lot of that comes from you, Dan. I think you generated quite a bit of that money yourself just
Absolutely.
By your excellent calls on the broadcast.
There's no question.
And they also have the need, you know, for that kind of star caliber MVP type player to be added. I mean, they haven't won a World Series since they had one of those guys. So you can make the argument that now is the time. Bryce Harper's also 26. So you can see the fit. You can also see the rub that it's going to take the kind of contract the Cardinals have usually tended to shy away from. So that to me is what I make out of this. The Cardinals can see it. It's a question of if they're not, they'd want to get there and actually get down to it. I don't think they're going to come out and say, look, we're going to go all out for Bryce Harper. No team is. I'm not buying this idea that the Cardinals are out of it. And I'm not buying the idea that Bryce Harper is already signed, sealed, delivered to Philadelphia. It could wind up there. I mean, they certainly are willing to throw money around and they need a face of their team. But I just think it's too early right now to see. This is Scott Boras, man. When he has a client who's going to get a lot of money, he drags things out. He makes sure every team has a chance to sleep on it before they say they're out. I think it's going to take a little bit more time to determine who's really wanting to go big or go broke for Bryce. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm not saying the Cardinals are out of it. I think they're looking at other options too, and that makes sense. I mean, really, to me, if you're going to go get an outfielder, the only one that makes sense is Bryce. You know, and it's not a shot at Michael Brantley or whoever else is out there, but when I look at that cumbersome situation that's in right field right now, the only way that you go and try to make that more complicated is if you're adding an elite player, and that's Bryce Harper. I don't know that going to sign Michael Brantley of the Red Sox is going to give you, or excuse me, of the Indians, is going to give you, you know, a guy that's so much better than whatever else you have there. It's kind of like trading in your car for one with 5,000 less miles. Like, it might be a better car, but is it worth pain in the butt of going to do that? So if it's not Bryce, then okay, then you, I think you do look at the infield. And then you're going to talk about, you know, the Moustakas and the Josh Donaldson, or maybe look at some sort of trade like a Paul Goldschmidt. I think all those things make a ton of sense. And then you've got to fix the bullpen too. So the Cardinals have other options, but I'm just not quite ready to say, you know, they're done with Bryce Harper right now.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you. What do you think plan B is? What do you think that direction would be if they don't get Bryce Harper? And you did mention it, but out of those options, which ones do you like most?
Well, I like Paul Goldschmidt idea. I mean, my goodness, if there's ever been a player who's more cut out to be a Cardinal, it's Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, I think Tony, you know, compared him to Albert when he was in Arizona. I'm not sure why the Diamondbacks would want to trade him. You know, they picked up his option. I think it was like something pretty reasonable. Unless they're just going to tank, then why would you trade the face of your team, especially when you just gave Eduardo Escobar a 3-year extension? I mean, to me, that doesn't scream we're looking to trade him. Now, I guess if they got floored with, you know, pitching by the Cardinals, maybe they would consider it. And I don't hate the idea of Josh Donaldson if he's one of multiple moves. I think there's enough track record there that maybe you take a bet on his upside. But I think if you add Josh Donaldson as the bat, then that's going to, you know, leave you open for chances for him not to perform. And then you're not too different than you were last year. You've kind of talked me into Moustakas more and more. I was pretty down on Moustakas in the past, but I looked at the numbers that he put up this year playing for a few different teams, and I see that he would have led this Cardinals team in RBIs and ranked second in home runs behind Matt Carpenter, played pretty solid defense. I think he'd be a good addition to the lineup. He hits left-handed, but I don't know that he's going to be the impact addition that the Cardinals say they're looking for.
Yeah, I say that just because I think the team, and this was minus Dexter Fowler, was so right-handed heavy, and that's an issue. And also, they've got left-handed bat corner infielders coming, and so you need to bridge the gap until those guys are officially ready to make their big league impact, and that's probably 2 years away. So he could be that potential fit for the St. Louis Cardinals. Want to switch gears a little bit, talk about the Blues. It was interesting. This last week, Joel Quenneville, the winningest coach in Blues history, second winningest coach in NHL history, was let go by the Blackhawks. I was around Joel when he was here and hired. I was here when he was fired. And I was here when, you know, he was at his heyday and the team won the President's Trophy and covered all the games that Joel was the head coach of the St. Louis Blues. At that point, I was working St. Louis Blues hockey. He is a magnificent coach, not just a hockey coach, but just in general coach. Got the most out of his players. I thought he was awesome in matchups in the NHL and got terrific matchups on the ice. Mike Yeo, as we've talked about in the first month and change here, has been on the hot seat, gets off the hot seat after a win the other day. Blues fans clamoring for potentially seeing Joel Quenneville return to St. Louis. Give me your initial thoughts on what you thought of the firing of Joel Quenneville and just where the Blues are right now.
Well, I don't get the firing. I think you can, you don't have too many coaches who can win 3 Stanley Cups. And I think the reaction in Chicago has been pretty fitting. They're going, hey, we know we're not that good this year, but is it really on Coach Q? And, you know, you saw they played in their first game without him, so it clearly wasn't all on Coach Q. But that's how this works in the NHL. Coaches get scapegoated. They're kind of the tires on the car. They come and go, and the engines mostly remain the same. The players are protected by the salary cap, and the coaches are flipped over like burgers. I mean, if Quenneville can get hired this can get fired this early in the season, any coach can go. And I think that's probably the tone that every coach heads to work with feeling in the NHL, especially Mike Yeo, who all eyes are now on him as the next coach who could go. The Kings have fired their coach. The Blackhawks have fired their coach. And I think a lot of people would have bet on, you know, the chance of Mike Yeo getting fired before that. I don't think that's deserved. I think Mike Yeo would be the definition of a coach who gets, you know, railroaded because his players aren't playing and they're looking for some sort of a message. I'm not saying that he's been perfect, but I do think this is more about guys needing to play better. But unfortunately, they can't go through and fire, you know, the players. They got to do something else. So that's kind of where things stand with the Blues right now. It was fascinating for me to see the reaction of Blues fans when it came to Quenneville. It seemed like that moved the needle almost here as much as it did in Chicago, and everybody was ready to connect the dots and you know, schedule the introductory press conference for him here before the team had even made any sign that it was interested in going that direction. And the biggest part, before Quenneville had even said if he's interested in coaching right away again. He's 60 years old, and he probably doesn't want to retire, I wouldn't imagine, but he might want to sit back, get his $6 million for this year, and then have a full playing field next season when it comes time to get back in. There's also some, you know, chatter that he's close with some owners, and maybe he might want to have more of a, you know, a coach/GM role, something that could be arranged. And I just don't know what he would gain from immediately jumping back in right now. He's been fired by the Blues before, so he has that experience. He knows what Yeo is under and what that pressure is like, and how the culture in St. Louis for some reason seems to get coaches fired. It just there's a long history of guys who've left, pretty good coaches who've been let go here. So I don't know. I mean, he has not said, the Post-Dispatch has reached out and tried to ask. He has not said if he's interested in coaching again right away. I think the Blues would be crazy to not try to gauge his interest. That I get that. I mean, they should do that. But in the meantime, Mike Yeo's got a coach to try to end this discussion here. Absolutely. I think that starts tonight. The thing that to me is, like, I want to see Yeo start, and I wrote about it for today's paper. I want to see Yeo start making moves that say that he's about winning this next game and this next game only. I don't want to see him protecting guys. I don't want to see him trying to protect players' feelings. He's got to play his best players tonight, the next night, and the next night. Try to get this team on a roll.
Yeah, I saw that. What about Pat Maroon sitting tonight?
Well, I think it's the right call. He needed a bit of a reset. I think he's an important part of this team, but right now he wasn't doing it. So give him a night off. See how he responds to it. If you win without him, then maybe consider giving him another night off. I think you know, Mike Yeo, as we record this, has not announced his decision, but I think you should start Chad Johnson tonight. And I know the Jake Allen supporters will get up in arms about that, but Chad Johnson stopped a ton of shots that last time out. He held the opponent to one goal. That's only happened in one other game this season. The Blues have only held their opponents to under three goals twice this season. And Chad Johnson, the backup goalie, has been one of them, and he's had only two starts. So as long as the Blues win, I would keep starting him and sort the rest out down the line.
Luke Hughes, we are St. Louis.
This is Dan McLaughlin, and I'm proud to be the first member of Fuse Select. It's a new, first-of-its-kind program ever to hit St. Louis through the Lou Fuse Automotive Network. So what exactly is Fuse Select? Here you go. It's a monthly car subscription that's an alternative to leasing or owning a vehicle. Just download the Fuse Select app. You could be driving an SUV for family trips. Maybe it's a fun sports car for date nights, a luxury sedan for a daily commute. And with your subscription, insurance, maintenance, cleaning is all included. My favorite part of the program, unlimited flips. The Fuse Select Concierge team delivers the vehicle of your choice right to your doorstep. Unlimited flips. It's incredible. Fuse Select. Learn more. Sign up at Fuse.com. Fuse Select, like owning a multi-car garage.
Lou Fuse, we are St. Louis.
Well, you know, we're talking about coaches on the hot seat. It seems like we talk about this every week, but Barry Odom has taken himself firmly off of it with a huge win at Florida. That is his signature win, and boy, did it come at a good time. And now it's become, you know, Barry Odom's month. Late October, early November, boy, Mizzou gets on a roll. There is no reason why Mizzou can't get to eight wins, a bowl game, maybe nine, and probably when you look back at the 2018 season, you'd say, man, oh man, Mizzou, let's just say, for instance, let's just play this out, Ben, that they're going to win the next three. Let's just say they win the bowl. You could say that this Missouri team should have won 11 games. It's incredible.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's kind of why, after they lost to Kentucky, I tried to say, look, bad loss, absolutely. And if your team goes in the tank from here, that's the kind of loss that can get a coach fired. But, you know, Jim Sterk has been adamant that he judges seasons on a whole. And right now, this one has the potential to finish up pretty strong. For whatever reason, Barry's teams finished the season much stronger than they started. Now, he's got to try to figure out how to flip that switch earlier. But right now, this is the money spot. November's been very good to him, and not just last season either. That was when they finished. That's how they finished in his first season. Remember, they got that big win against Arkansas. That was when Arkansas was coached by Brett Bielema, when Arkansas had it rolling a little bit. He got that big win against Arkansas to close out his first season. So he has a style that gets guys rolling toward the end of the year, and upsetting Florida at the Swamp was a big one, man. I mean, an 11th-ranked Florida team, they were strong in every facet of the game, and to me, the biggest part was they finished. It wasn't surprising to me to see them jump out early, but what was surprising was how they played when the game was continuing to go deep in the second half. They never let off the gas on the road, and that was where this team had struggled. Drew Locke looked excellent. He looked like he was playing carefree. He looked like the guy we thought he could be. And, you know, I had some questions about, do you think we were too hard on this team after that win? And I said no, because I think that win showed that the talent that this bunch has. It wasn't a different team. They play different when they have Emmanuel Hall back. He's a huge threat at receiver, and he can open up the field and make everybody around him better. They played with a confident quarterback, and they dominated the line of scrimmage. I mean, the defense made stops and made plays, and that's kind of the team that we thought they could be, and we're seeing it now. We're just seeing it later in the year than I think the Tigers hope, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't finish on a roll here. Vanderbilt's not good, Tennessee's not good, and Arkansas is terrible. So there really is no reason this team should not finish with 4 wins in a row, get to a bowl game, see how that goes. This could be a ranked team by the time all is said and done.
Unbelievable. You covered Missouri basketball the other night on Tuesday. What were your takeaways?
Well, it could be some growing pains this year, Danny. I think that they got to play through Jeremiah Tillman. He's 6'10", he's strong, and he seemed more patient and comfortable with the ball in his hands around the rim. And that's where this team is going to start. That's how this team has to play. They have to get it into him, and he has to do a good job of scoring or kicking it out to the guards to let them make plays. That's how they're going to have to do it with Jontay Porter out. He's not coming back. He had knee surgery this week. He's going to be in Colorado until he's cleared to come home, and he's not going to be able to play at all this season. To me, the question is, how does this team play with some of these young and experienced guards? You kind of know what you're going to get out of Kevin Purrier and Jordan Geist, the seniors. You kind of know what you're going to get out of Jeremiah Tillman, as long as he can stay on the court. That's a huge question for him. Can he stay out of foul trouble? But what can some of these young or new guards do? You have Mark Smith, who looked great in the opener, poured in a ton of points, hit 5 3-pointers. What can Torrance Watson do? What can Xavier Pinson add? What can some of these guys that we're not quite as familiar with contribute? Because that, to me, is going to determine the outcome of this season.
When I did the SLU game the other night, we'll wrap it up with this. I wanted to jump out of my seat, and even though I haven't touched a basketball in quite some time, I did think I could make a couple free throws. It was a little frustrating, Ben, and they need to hit some free throws.
Because I was watching the game. I was watching the score at Mizzou Arena, and they were killing them. And then, like, at the end of the game, I looked up, and they had won by 10. I had no clue how it happened, and come to find out it was we joke about it, but I think some teams in conference play are going to take advantage of that. If I see Hassan French down in the post with the ball in his hands, and I don't feel like I have a good chance of stopping him, I'm fouling him every time.
Well, I think that's what teams may do. I really do.
Absolutely. They should. I mean, he missed 70 free throws last year, and his percentage was terrible. I asked Travis this week, and I said, I know you're going to get a million questions on it. I said, let me tell you
what happened last year, okay, before you go a little bit further. So the team last year, they shot 65% as a team, which is not good enough. But Hassan French went 40 for 110. And I asked Travis Ford, and I don't know if this is the same conversation that you had, but on the website, and I said, well, what happened in the summer? I'm sure that you worked on it. He said, well, yeah, we worked on it, but sometimes it just doesn't get any better, and we're kind of back to square one. I don't know if that's the same thing that he said to you.
Well, I just said, how do you handle it? You know, because it's kind of like pitching, right? Like, you know, you talk about a pitcher who, you know, almost has yips, I think. And it's like, so it can be a case of the more that you try to solve it, the worse it gets. You don't want to make it so much of a big deal that it becomes a massive thing, right? So how do you do it? And they're really, and Travis more or less said, you just have to keep trying to keep it loose and keep trying to coach it up, but we can't make it this big ordeal. But I'm telling you, if they can't hit free throws, teams are going to take advantage of it because you can't stop them from scoring. If he gets the ball down, but he's stronger than anybody they're going to play against. But if you send him to the free throw line, all that strength seems to melt away, and it's actually, you know, it hurts him more than it helps him. And that's got to be something that they find a way to get better at because it's going to be a big weakness in their game.
I thought the other thing, too, kind of an inauspicious start for Cartier Gordon. No big deal. It was his first ever true college game, but they've got to find a way to get him the ball on the block. I mean, he's a scorer on the block, and he had, I think it was something like 3 or 4 fouls in 10 minutes and was a non-factor for the most part. But a lot of fans, obviously, here in St. Louis are so curious about Cartier Gordon. In a general sense, what have you heard about, you know, his progress at SLU in the first couple of months on the practice floor? And everybody knows about the shattered backboard and the excitement of this young man. But what have you heard about him and just the progress thus far he's made at SLU?
Well, I know they're really proud of him. And they're really, I think they were, I don't want to say surprised because you always want the guy to play well and hard. But I think they're really impressed with his tenacity, with his willingness to be physical and to get after it in practice. I know I was talking with Bob Ramsey, and he said early on in the season he would go to practice. And, you know, it used to be that Hassan French in practice would just push people around and do his own thing, and there wasn't really anybody who could challenge him in terms of competing at practice. And Cartier Gordon showed up day one and said, well, I'm going to go toe-to-toe with this guy. And not in terms of an aggressive way, but just in terms of, hey, if you're going to come down here and try to back me down, then I'm going to put up a fight. And I think that's made both of those guys better, having the ability to practice against one another. And they need him to be a force on this team, especially with the departure of Santos, who was suspended and decided to leave the program. I think Cardi has to be on the court. And I think he's going to experience some of the same issues maybe that another guy who kind of similar, Jeremiah Tillman, had at Mizzou. It might be hard for him to stay on the court due to fouls. He's got to play smart. He's got to realize what is worth risking a foul and what is not. And I think that's going to be very key for him and this team this season because they need him out there. And he's not just a low post scorer. He can get out and run a little bit. He can rebound. He can alter shots. He can play defense. So they need him to be in good shape. And they need him to be out of foul trouble because, you know, he's an important part of this team and he's going to be a starter. He is a starter. He was kind of under the weather for a little while toward the end of the preseason. So he was coming off the bench, but that was not because of his performance. It was because he'd missed a practice here and there because he was sick. So now that he's healthy, he'll start.
Ben, as always, fun to do this. We'll hook up next week. And again, let's give our listeners an idea of what you're writing about this weekend in the Post-Dispatch.
Yeah, so I'm actually I'm going to be off this week, and so they want to put up with a column from me on Sunday. But I'm writing about MLS for tomorrow, kind of just looking at the landscape and what's going on in other cities that could help or potentially compete with St. Louis. So I'll have that in tomorrow's Post-Dispatch, and have a column up today talking about the Blues and what it's like for Mike Yeo, who has to, you know, try to put the best team on the ice every night, knowing that half the fan base is connecting dots to Quenneville and what kind of mentality he should have moving forward. So that's in today's paper and also at stltoday.com.
Awesome stuff, Ben. Talk to you next week. Thanks.
Sounds good, man. See ya.